All right, let's get started. Welcome everybody to tonight's September 2018 meeting of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission. I'd like to begin with roll call and introductions, beginning with the gentleman to my immediate right here.
Alex Gaw.
Robert Hines.
Sean Dennison.
Mark Person.
Jan Bader with the City of Vancouver.
Sharon Lewandowski with Clark County.
Jackie Camp, Clark County.
Rock Manley, commission member.
Michelle Kapitanovich, commission member.
Thank you, everybody. Okay, let's start with the approval of the minutes from the July. No, is that correct?
August.
That is July.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's your first note.
August 15th.
Right. I'm just keeping you on your toes.
No, it says August on the notes.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'll give the commission members a moment to look that over if you haven't had an opportunity already. I hope you have because it's a pretty large collection of meeting notes. And entertain a motion to approve.
Robert, we also included Sarah, since she couldn't be here. She provided some comments on the notes.
Sure.
So you'll see that in your packet there.
Okay. I noticed on page 2, it says, the third true paragraph, so below the middle, it says substantial planning. I think it should be planting. And most of them are typos, but I figured that was one that might actually mean something different. The other thing was that the comparison of the standards, that the section right above it, there's this one phrase in the historic overlay that is just confusing to me. It's not section E, but it's preserve the view of the academy from the Evergreen entrance to downtown. Which I keep playing that over and over in my head, but that to me was one of my sticking points on the during the presentation, and I don't know if that should be in the part of the standards, that language. I mean, it's in that paragraph, I think it's paragraph 3 that says standards and requirements, and it's the last phrase in that paragraph.
This came from his slide, though.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the separate discussion that we need to have about the heritage overlay.
Language and everything.
Yeah,
okay.
And the language.
Yeah, and I just didn't, because it was one of the things that was sticking with me, and I didn't know whether we should include it, because it's, you know, these points are being used to say why the city is agreeing that it complies with the, but there's that one phrase that sticks out to me, in addition to the ambiguity of Section E and other things. But anyway.
Yeah, we just included what was said or what was shown on the screen.
Okay.
So I had a comment, page 3, third paragraph from the bottom, states that Hines explained that this is not a public hearing, but because a lot of public interest, he will conduct the meeting like a public hearing. Yes, I did say that, but that was partially due to staff recommendations, so maybe we can put that in there parenthetically.
Sure.
It just reads like I was kind of winging it.
Oh.
Dictating.
Hey, guys, let's pretend this is a public hearing. That was the only thing that jumped out at me. Did you want to read Sarah's comments into the record?
Okay, so I reviewed the meeting minutes and support them with a few changes. At section number 2, could you refer to the staff report or attach it rather than all of the bulleted points? There was discussion as to whether some of the standards were interpreted correctly and or are a bit misleading. I suggest that we remove the section that begins with, this is a comparison. page 2, to the sentence that ends with FAA requirements.
This whole section here that Alex is asking about, suggesting just to remove it. Page 2.
So technically, we don't attach stuff to the minutes. There are the notes from the meeting, but we can, if that helps with the position. So her second point, at Sean's testimony on page 8, he stated that he discussed this case with Nick Van at a conference. That detail is missing. My comment that follows was specific to Sean relying on a conversation that he had outside of the meeting. And then type point 3 on page 9, Carolyn Plenty, there's a typo at the sentence that reads, she graduated DIN 1916, so we can easily take off the D.
So it wasn't Nick Van that I spoke to at the conference. It was Joanne Hensley. But this part isn't about my conversation at the conference, so it's, as it is, it's accurate. Oh.
It's accurate as it is?
Mm-hmm. Because I did speak to Nick Van, but not at a conference.
Oh.
I spoke to someone else at a conference.
Okay. So just leave it as it is?
Yes.
Any other?
And it should, I thought that I said this when I sent my notes back, but the citing in this could jeopardize tax credits.
Where are you?
So on that last paragraph.
On page 8?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it says that Nick Van had said the siding in the scaleless new construction might not comply with the standards and could just jeopardize the tax credits. I don't want to put him on the hook for something that he didn't say.
Okay, so any thoughts on Sarah's first point there about taking off?
Yeah.
And would you just substitute the criteria as stated in the heritage?
I didn't really read through it. He just showed it on the screen, and I captured it. I didn't read that into the record. So
we can take it out.
Yeah, I was rereading it, and I think I see Sarah's point. And it's in the staff report, which is part of the record anyway, which is what we're talking about. So I think Sarah's comment makes sense.
Okay, looks like we took care of 2, and we'll take care of 3. It's a simple grammatical edit. Okay, that's all we have.
I make a motion to approve the minutes from the August 15th meeting as amended through our suggestions here.
A second.
All in favor of approving the minutes from the August meeting, say aye.
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 All opposed? Nobody's opposed. The motion is carried. Minutes are approved. All right. We have a public hearing this evening. Tonight we're going to be talking about a nomination to the Clark County Heritage Register. This is for the Sedgwick Building at 801 Washington Street in Vancouver. Before we get started, I will ask all commission members present that they announce any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest with respect to this nomination. If there are none, we will consider the public hearing opened, and we will begin with the staff report. Mark?
Thank you, Chair Hines. I will go over this. As you mentioned, this is for the Sedgwick Building, also known as Murray's Corner. We received an application for a nomination to the Clark County Heritage Register. Those of you who were on the commission in 2016 may recall that this came before you then. It was staff's recommendation that it not be placed on the register at that time, and the HPC agreed. they were given some feedback based on the application that could make their case stronger. And based on that, we feel they've definitely bolstered the case to be placed on the register. I've included the 2016, 2018, and nomination and the meeting minutes from December of 2016 for your reference as part of the staff report. The statement of significance, the applicant is using criterion 5 that relates to persons of significance in national, state, or local history. And the physical building, I think as most of you know, it's on the corner of 8th and Washington, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. The bottom of the building is Tommy O's restaurant. It's a 1900s commercial building. There's been significant alterations over the past decades. We have a 1937 photo there that of the south side that gives you a sense of what it looked like at that time. And then we have a current photo under figure 2. So according to our heralded VMC chapter 17 there, it can be designated for the register if it's at least 50 years old, has integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, is significantly associated with history, architecture, archaeology, engineering, or cultural heritage of the community, and meets at least one of the criteria listed under 1739070. And again, it's the association of lives of persons of significance in this case, local history. So the applicant's nomination really detailed Dr. Isabel Sedgwick's role as owner and practitioner of her, I believe, doctor's office during the time that she owned it, and then also its lives as a tavern and a furniture business in the mid-1900s. So based on this time, staff is recommending that the building be placed on the local register due to the association with the lives of people that have been well documented in the application. And I believe we have Holly Chamberlain here, too, if there are any additional questions. I know Holly was involved in a lot of the research for this nomination.
Okay. Do we have any questions for staff or the commission?
So for this, the code hasn't been changed yet, right?
Not the city code, no.
Okay.
If there are no questions for staff, we'll move on to the presentation by the applicant. Going once, going twice.
I did have one question. You mentioned the prosecution for the unauthorized medical procedure, and I was wondering,
a question for the applicant?
Yes, for the applicant.
Well, we should wait till she finishes her
presentation. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I jumped again.
Did you have a presentation for us, Holly?
Most of what I know is in the
And nutshell, could you kind of summarize the significance of the historic character associated with this property, Ms. Dr. Sedgwick?
It's a very unusual property in Vancouver, a broader scope of land beyond that, in that it was built by a woman entrepreneur just after the turn of the century, and given her advanced education in the medical field, it makes it even more unusual. So it's one of those properties where I feel like the history really trumps the building itself, that it's such an unusual example of a woman occupying a building that she not only built, had her business in, but went on to continue to practice after that for a number of years. So I can't say that it's unique in Vancouver to have been built by a woman. We have a number of early 20th century and even late 19th century female entrepreneurs, but it's certainly unusual, at least statewide, for having been built by a woman and by women doctors.
Any questions of the applicant? Get things started.
I do have a question.
You're welcome.
So did you find any context about how common that was? Or that was just one piece that intrigued me. And so, and I think that if that was an uncommon thing, or if there was more substantiation for your conclusion, which there's a good chance it's right, I think that is something that could really bolster the significance of her as a medical practitioner.
Wasn't she like one of two doctors in Clark County, female doctors at that time in Clark County?
She was, just quick clarification, are you referring to the operation or the building of the building?
No, the unauthorized procedure.
As far as I can tell, it's probably an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a couple friends who, parenthetically, who were somewhat familiar with medical history, and because I couldn't find any additional information on the operation, I think they probably were, it was considered lacking in taste to refer to it specifically in print at the time, but that's what I assume it was. I thought maybe it could have been a sterilization, but a friend said that wasn't necessarily, it wasn't necessarily illegal, and so the reason I didn't put a lot about it in the nomination is because I wasn't able to find out.
Okay. Or even doctors, yeah, that was the thing that was I was really curious about. All right, thank you.
So did she practice there for very long? Or?
No, she sold the building in 1913 and started practicing in Eastern Oregon at that time, or / Portland. It's a little unclear exactly what happened between 1913 and about 1921 when she was in Portland for sure, but there's certainly evidence that she was practicing in Eastern Oregon for a time, and there wasn't even any gossip in the newspaper about why she left town or why her parents moved to Portland. There was no indication of any particular issues. I think they just maybe were moving to a bigger market in the case of the parents. And she did have business interests in Eastern Oregon, her timberlands and some other properties there. So I thought perhaps that she had moved to Eastern Oregon to be able to be closer to her properties and oversee timber production.
So her association with the building is just for maybe a two-year period, or?
1907 to 1907.
Oh, 1907, okay.
Is it clear that she had her practice in the building that entire period?
Yes, it was the Sedgwick Sanitarium.
And is the name Sedgwick Building actually on the building itself?
Not presently.
Was it at any?
Right now it's called Murray's Corner. A later owner.
Was it at any point in time? Was there a plaque or?
That I don't know because of carving. Any photos from that time period. However, it was referred to in the newspaper as Sedgwick Building. Mm-hmm. So
community has always referred to it as the Sedgwick Building.
I doubt that. I think that it was probably only known as that for 2 years that she was actually in there. I can't speak afterwards. I don't have the evidence until much later when it was clearly Paul Murray's corner.
And it's known as the Sedgwick Building now? That's really the connection here, right? I mean, I
was that Dean's?
That's the historic name.
Okay. Oh.
But I don't have any. It wasn't referred that way in the deed, and I never found any architectural plans or any other references other than those in the paper.
Because I think the biographical information is compelling. Certainly, her role in the community and just her life in general. And so then it's the attachment to the building itself, right? It was kind of erected as the Sedgwick Building. And
right,
kind of
because she built it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And named in some way the Sedgwick Building. But really the connection here is just that Dr. Sedgwick, a historic character in the history of Clark County, once occupied that building for a period of time.
She didn't just occupy it. She was the person who built the building. She had some financing from her father.
Right.
But it was her money, her planning that went into creating the building, choosing that lot. She bought the property a couple years prior to that.
Right.
But no, I do not know if there was ever a signage on the building.
Right. Okay. Any other questions of the applicant?
Is it known what kind of shape the original materials are underneath the stucco?
I believe it's probably the brick, because the other walls are brick,
mm-hmm.
and it's referred to as having been a brick building. I don't know exactly when the stucco was applied. It was clearly there by 37 from the historic photo that's mm-hmm.
So the single photograph that you've been able to find that predates the stucco is that Columbia newspaper?
No, it postdates the stucco. The photo's from 36 or 37. The stucco's there. You can see the inside lines.
Okay.
Not a lot of other details. A newspaper photograph.
I thought there was one from, like, earlier than that, the snowstorm, and showed the three courses of brick detail at the parapet?
The storm is from the 1930s.
Mm. Maybe it is. I thought I was seeing that detail that's correct. But, I mean, if there aren't any other, if there's no other photographic evidence, there's no other photographic.
Yeah, on the second page of the report, this is the snow picture.
In the final iteration of the nomination form, will there be a better photo of that 1930s, like a more blown up, clearer photo of that 37? I was looking for it back here.
Well, the photos are not attached to the report.
Okay, but there are photos that go with it. Okay.
I didn't have all of them printed out, Holly, but
it's too far away, and I blew it up on the computer, but I still can't see it.
Okay. And then the only other thing, it seems well written. I like that it's focusing now on the person, whereas before it seemed to have this sort of ambiguous streetcar. But the topo map seems not correct to me. It's sort of showing the Phillida Salmon Creek area. Minor point.
doesn't fall into that topo map at all?
No, it doesn't.
You blow that up.
Appropriate.
Oh, you're right.
Right. Okay. And, okay, one more question. Will the 2016 nomination be appended onto the 2018 one, or is that going to be discarded altogether?
I would not see a reason to keep it. I would say this one supersedes that one, but okay. I'm not sure how often that happens that people submit two different documents.
I mean, since it wasn't approved, yeah, I think this 2018 one would be the nomination.
I had a much different interpretation of the architecture of the building, and that's why I left out the entire thing about street park development.
Yeah, it sparked an interesting conversation, which, you know, I was sort of interested in following up on. So seeing it again, I was like, oh, yeah, that whole streetcar issue again, you know, and would like to sort of, but that's not really for the nomination.
Yeah, I would say that that's a reason not to include it, because that streetcar suburb discussion in there is actually really wrong.
Okay.
So bit of a red herring.
Well, there is such a thing, streetcar suburbs, and this building form was frequently found near streetcar stops because it's a convenient tile to use, but this part of downtown is not a streetcar suburb development, and so it's not really appropriate for this building.
Well, there's no streetcar vernacular either.
No, there's no streetcar vernacular.
Okay.
But no, it was not. Vancouver was not a suburb in the same sense at that time, and streetcar suburbs refer to specific things that this isn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for Holly? All right. If there's no more questions of the applicant, we'll open it up for public comment. All right. If there's no public comment, we'll consider the public hearing closed and turn it over to the commission members for deliberation and a motion. So I'll over, you going to say?
Oh, please.
So my thoughts were that, yeah, you know, paring it down, focusing on the criteria, which I think was our advice at the close of the 2016 hearing, focusing on the life of Dr. Sedgwick, I think you've done a great job of kind of establishing her significance in local history and establishing the attachment to the building. So for that reason, I would agree with the staff report that the Sedgwick Building is eligible for the Clark County Heritage Record, Heritage Register. My only comments.
I agree. I did struggle a little bit with the integrity of location, design, setting, materials, work, and feeling, and association, since we still have that and we removed something for not meeting all of them. But I think the fact that the design is, in terms of massing and the fenestration, even if it's not originally materials, it's still basically that original design. And I think that the fact that the materials and workmanship are probably still under there, you know, almost certainly, I think that it's, and because the significance is the person more than the building, I think that it does meet that one. That was the only one that I went back and forth with myself over a couple of days with. But I do think that it meets it.
I just would add, I thought the applicant did a nice job of detailing the history of Dr. Sedgwick and her contributions and what a unique individual she was at that time. And so, you know, I would support the nomination based on that.
Are you entertaining motions?
I'll entertain motions at this time.
I, I move that we approve the Sedgwick building for inclusion on the Clark County Heritage Register.
Second.
A motion for approval of the Sedgwick building. I would like to amend that motion. I think the discrepancy that you pointed out, Alex, with the topographic map focusing on the Philida area as opposed to the downtown area where it should, is probably something that needs to be included in its rightful place in these materials. So I would support it.
Could have just been an uploading error, Commissioner, so I'll work with Holly on that and make sure we have the right information there.
I will double check, but if you could see the whole map did not print out on the page here. If you saw the whole thing, you would see that it comes down into downtown Vancouver.
I just wonder, though, if printing the whole quad, though, instead of being able to be zooming into the downtown area so you can actually... They want the whole quad?
They want the whole quad.
Yeah. Okay.
I believe from the past, you might want to change that in your regulations in the future. But
a whole quad on an 8.5 by 11 is the...
Well, that's the secretary standard.
This map from the county record does zoom in.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that there... I don't think there is a USGS map.
I think we, Sharon and I just recently tried to do the online one. I think we found one, so we'll share that where it zooms in. It's is that what the one was? Okay. We'll figure it out. It's simple part of the record that.
Yeah. Inset or something.
Yes, true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No.
So maybe let me change.
Yeah.
Let me change my stipulation to be that we just ensure that the proper topographic area is included in there. And it may already be, and it just got caught up, but just need to make sure that's there.
Then, and also that it prints right for the next person who prints this out.
Right.
So that's the motion as amended. Anybody second the motion as amended?
I will second the motion as amended.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Unanimous. The Sedgwick Building, after 2 long years, has been finally listed on the Heritage Register. All right. We have another historic property to discuss. This is not a public hearing. I don't know. Should we treat it like a public
hearing? No.
This is for the Clark County Poor Farm, 78th Street Heritage Farm, 1919. It's a request for feedback on a proposed awning over the ADA door and ramp. And we have Annette Ferry-Getty here with us today. Welcome to discuss that. So let's see. How should we begin? Would you like to give us an update from staff?
Yeah, Nick, why don't you come on up? Sharon, why don't you give a little brief?
Okay. So there isn't a staff report yet because we just want to just come and discuss some options with you for materials and how to attach the building, how to attach the awning, and why this is being requested. So why don't you just kind of give an overview?
So just to clarify here, the documents that were given to the commission are for an application of or certificate of appropriateness or a waiver of certificates. That's basically what we're discussing here, correct?
Is right. So
whether
they
or not we need, it needs a certificate of appropriateness.
Well, that could be part of the discussion, but when Annette came to us and showed us what they would like to do, we thought it was a good idea for her to come, as we have done with other properties, kind of get a feedback from you before they went into deeper, talking to the awning company on what you all might have some feedback for before they come back with an official review.
Okay. All right.
Yes, we at the people who work at the building
feel on this west side where the ADA ramp is it's very imperative that we get some protection, because this door, primarily for the people who use the ramp, the door gets very brittle and has to be replaced every 3 years. So far that's what we're finding, is every 3 years the door gets replaced. But it's also helpful for the people that are using this entrance to come in, because it tends, they have a hard time, you know, like if they have a wheelchair or something, to kind of get in, to be able to grab the door accurately. And so by having an awning, it will help with the sun protection, and then also it would help with, if we have snow, random statistically speaking, we don't have a lot of people come use the ramp in the snow, but. Yes.
So is that where the issue with accessibility comes from? If it's snowy or there's bad weather, it makes it difficult to?
To open the door and dryly, and to protect our patrons that come in to use the building for classes, for workshops, to get their needs attended to. Yes.
Are you having some rot problems as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the door gets, the sun bakes it. They just recently, a couple months ago, ended up painting it. But it was in line to be replaced again, because the sun is just so harsh on that side, and it just dries out the door, and it gets very splintery. So if you can't, if you're navigating a wheelchair or a walk or whatever, some people, we've had people with their little knee thing, you know, when they break their leg and they have the ankle, their knee, yeah, exactly. They have a hard time opening all that, and so having an awning, it will help with the giving them cover when they struggle to open the door, and then they won't have to worry about grabbing it and potentially getting splinters. I know that sounds goofy, but
it happens.
It does happen. Yeah, we had it actually at some tables we had further in the property too that was baked, and wood tables, and we ended up replacing them because we didn't want to take that chance.
So it looks like it's a west-facing opening, and
faces
the old
west,
ramp kind of points south. The old stairs.
Yeah. We have that brand new west parking lot built, and so it does tend to be used a lot more, not just with ADA, but the general public overall, and so it does tend to be used more frequently, and it does tend to, especially if you have like stuff in your hands when you come to workshops or something, it's hard to kind of get the door open, and then you're kind of struggling. And then you can see back in the day, we had, you can see in the photos, there was an west porch designed at one point there, so this won't be totally out of design for the building. I think the last one you'll see, there's from 1959, I think, that had the porch already there. So obviously we're not going to replace the porch, but this awning would really help with that situation. And then we would be adhering it to the building. That won't cause any permanent damage. It would be easy to come off. It won't leave any markings or blemishes to the building. And there was, we had a couple of drawings we had from the awning company. They gave us one with the legs that came out to the railing, which we kind of prefer only because it covers the whole area there. But they can do this without the legs, but then it's only 3 feet 6 inches. And so then you end up getting dripped on or snowed on, or the door still might get baked or whatever. But the larger 6 foot, I think, will be the best to kind of cover that area. And then there's several materials. I think we have the materials that I sent over that they gave us, so you can feel the type of material. It's not a like a vinyl awning by any means. It's a nice umbrella type fabric that will give it some beauty, I guess, or some better protection.
Do you have any renderings of what it might look like aside from this?
No, that's McGee didn't want to quite do the engineering yet until they proceeded. So,
because we are just talking preliminary at this point, and how to proceed.
Yeah.
So the
been there? That's a historic opening to that
building,
that door.
Yes, it's always been there.
Okay.
They didn't always use it. At one point, it was the ADA ramp was there, and they had actually gotten rid of the porch, and it wasn't used for quite a while.
Okay.
But then when it came back, when the extension moved in, we ended up needing it because we needed an ADA ramp, and that was the best place to put that.
And then this shows, this is from the 50s, did you say?
Yeah, okay. I'll give the plans. It was the other photo. This was all of the plans, and so you see the east and west porch, and then that's the closest to just the west.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the awning would capture that attractive wall pack light fixture and
right.
span across.
Right. It's all above it.
18 inches either side of the recess for the door opening, it looks like.
Yeah, the awning would go right above the light. I don't know if you can see in this.
Kind of tucked up under that fascia panel.
Yes. I don't know if you can kind of see, there's like all big bolts above, and I think McGee said a little in between where these bolts are and above the light, and it would come out 6 feet, and then they would sink into the railing that is there.
Right.
And then this way it won't cause any tripping hazard for anybody who's coming through.
Is there any discussion of how much the awning might limit the light and its projection at the end of the room?
We have not, but I can find that out for you.
It's just something to think about.
Yes. Well, that's another thing, too, is we also think the awning might help, because right now we're always having to sweep this out. We get a lot of bugs. So it might actually help that, or it might make it worse. We're not sure yet, so, but I can definitely ask about that.
Any pattern you're leaning toward?
Something very neutral, like the one that your thumb is on is kind of nice, or the little, or the darker brown one. Nothing that's going to...
This one?
No.
Or this one?
That one, yeah.
Toned.
A dark brown's a little bit.
Yeah. Understated.
Yeah.
And the construction of that wall is... stucco on masonry, do you think?
Sure. All the pretty expertise.
Yeah. That's kind of what it looks like in the pictures. I mean.
Yeah. I'm not really sure because it's so original, because you can see the outline of where the porch used to be.
Right.
You can see the footings and everything, so and where the post used to be. The east porch is still there, and you can see all the pillars and stuff like that, the box columns that were there. But for some reason, and we're not really sure, again, trying to find history as to why the west side porch was illuminated. We're not even sure why.
Probably for the same reason that you're replacing the door every 3 years.
It wore out quicker.
That's very logical.
Or the front facade is gone.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that this west entrance has already been altered. You know, we've got this ADA, this sort of pipe rail ADA, great looking thing. Seems like the awning would be sort of a minimal addition. That doesn't seem to me like it would detract from the historic nature of the building much at all. But I guess are there specific criteria we need to be considering?
Well, yeah, you'll be using the criteria for certificate of appropriateness, which is the
the waiver.
Oh, it's not a waiver, so I think that's confusing people.
Okay.
So our apologies. So this is an application that could be used also for a waiver, which is a demolition.
Okay.
So there's boxes you check towards the bottom here in the middle of the page.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if that's confusing to you all, we can change that and make a different application.
No, I thought I heard somebody say that this was the...
So a waiver is only a demolition.
Okay.
So this is feedback with the intent that it would eventually come back to the commission for a COA.
Right, correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and so you would be using the Secretary of Interior standards for rehabilitation as you
emails.
So that would be part of the staff report that we would go through each of those criteria and see how it meets. But we wanted to make sure if there was things that you all had some input on, so as they talked to the awning and they designed this, that they could incorporate that as part of their submittal.
Yes.
And things that you may need, yeah.
Do you have any preferences as to, like, color or design? Or?
So generally, I think we all They give some general guidelines for how any additions should kind of look, you know, and there's a lot of detail behind that that Sean could lecture on for quite some time if he wanted to.
I try to avoid doing that.
But that's a resource that's available to you, so that's really the main thing that we look for. In this type of circumstance where, you know, the original porch that was back there has been removed, obviously this part of the building is in the back of the building, right? It's on the back or the side?
Side.
It's on
back.
The side.
It's on the side.
This is the parking lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And upgraded to be ADA accessible and stuff, so there's maybe a somewhat lower threshold of scrutiny in terms of design changes. Anybody else have anything to add to that as far as guidance?
Yeah. Jackie, when we went to that meeting about a month ago, mm-hmm. you know, when they were doing the plan,
yep.
farm, what style is that building? It does have a certain style.
Yeah, Italian, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Ish.
Yeah, ish.
Stylish, yes.
Yeah, because we have a shed roof that is downstairs by the labs, and it's been there since the building, and I don't think that was actually supposed to be there, but it's been there ever since, so.
So I think as you're planning and getting ready to come back to apply for the certificate of appropriateness, I think there are two things. One is how you actually plan out this awning, which is a pretty simple thing. And then the other thing is the things that we would like to see so that we feel like we're making a good decision. So in on that first, you know, I think because it's a modern awning, you almost don't have to worry about some of the standard concerns about differentiation of something like this, which is not original to the building. Normally you would want to have some kind of differentiation so you don't give the impression that it's an original. I don't see an awning company building something where that's a concern, but, you know, something to think about. I think that in general, you probably want it to be as, to disappear as much as possible. Just so that, you know, it doesn't obstruct the building, it doesn't change the way that the building reads. As I remember, as you're coming down 78th Street, I think your view of this entrance is obstructed anyway, isn't it?
Right, we have trees.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even that's not a really big deal. The fact that it's already altered, I think, though, for me, probably the bigger concerns is how they actually attach it to the building.
Yeah, I thought we were doing just some anchor bolts. I think that's what we were doing. Let's see, I believe, we place, let's see, between the windows and under the eave, above the outside light, the awning will be bolted only onto the structure with no long-term building side effects.
So that joint where the awning meets the building, okay. if you were doing a permanent alteration, that would require counter flashing and dealing with water infiltration, because especially we're concerned about the historic material behind there.
Right.
It may be better just to not attach it, to have it be essentially freestanding, four legs, so it doesn't have to bolt to the building. You don't have to worry about, I don't know the material. If it's brick, anchoring to historic brick is always a tricky business. Yeah. But also, if you end up with something bolted right against the building and you get water infiltration, you could see damage to that brick. So it might be safer just to let it be freestanding, especially since I doubt those poles are all that substantial, and they can be really close to the building where they're not in the way. I think that'd probably just be better for the building,
okay.
in general, because you're just not worrying about that thing. I'm not sure that it's essential, and, you know, we could talk about whether it's essential, but I think that might be a safer thing. As far as what we would want to see, you know, we'd want to see drawings where we can get a sense of what this is actually going to look like on the building. You know, so, and that's, you know, they'll be putting together some, since they're an awning company, you know, it might be fairly basic, but fairly basic is okay. But I think we would want to see what it's actually going to look like with the building so that we can see how it interacts with the appearance and character of the building.
I mean, even this drawing here, you know, the 1 foot 2 inch side is basically the same length as the 6 foot, you know, so it does not give a very accurate
yeah.
depiction.
Yeah.
Pitches.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, digital renderings may not be necessary, but at least something to scale. And with the,
Because I think they submitted, what they did is they had actually taken photos of the building and then they drew some stuff on, which I don't know if they're in, packet.
Something like that could be sufficient. Mm-hmm. If they do a good enough job of just drawing it on top of a photograph, you know,
yeah.
Even that.
These, yeah, this is what they did. So you have the one drop there. And then.
And note the anchor bolt holes in this cut anchor bolts
yeah.
in the surface
yeah.
there from the old structure in that photograph. I was going to add to what you said, Sean, about how it's attached and whether you know flashing is an issue or not. You know, I'm seeing something that it does have a. I don't know how significant that overhang is.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's probably only 18 inches or something, if that. But it does have some protection from the weather up high. And then there's that stepped fascia below the overhang,
mm-hmm.
which probably has, and this is speculation, it probably has some kind of drip edge at the bottom of that fascia. I think, you know, the two concerns I have about the attachment and the weatherization is, I think it's probably okay if it's not flashed because of those two protecting elements on the wall. But I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't suck it up totally tight to the wall. The anchor bolts, I'd be a little concerned about. You've got a 8-foot by 6-foot sail, and our prevailing winds are from the south and west.
Yes.
And you are gonna have some kind of concern. So it might be difficult to project something off of the deck to support that east edge of the canopy and, you know, prevent any racking or lateral movement of the canopy structure without pinning it to the wall somehow.
It definitely is very windy on that side. That open close sign, we've had that thing fall and catches the wind and ends up in the bushes. So it does.
That's actually the water that I'm worried about, is the wind-driven water
yeah.
that hits the wall and then flows down.
Right.
That's why you leave a gap.
So, yeah, if there's a gap and it's just a mechanical connection, then
yeah.
you know, and
put some spacers in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the other picture, they kind of show, yeah, it's kind of funny, they just kind of drove by and took photos and then they just did their things. But it attaches posts with the plates in the front. I think that was the, yeah, that one.
Probably the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
Least expensive, most effective, I would
yeah.
guess.
And it's not like that ramp is historic, so
no.
right.
you attach to it is not a big concern.
But Sean, you I think mentioned something about make the structure go away. And maybe that powder coated framework and posts and mounting plates, maybe they match whatever color
mm-hmm.
the handrail is going to ultimately be.
Yeah,
I think that's a good suggestion.
Yeah. And you're right, this is not original. The ADA ramp is not original. And we did have a snake on it the other day, so it's always it's used by everybody.
Great. Well, we'll see Annette maybe if next month, perhaps, depending on if they're ready. And also the, like Michelle mentioned, the preservation plan and maintenance plan has a lot of detail, more detail probably than the nomination did, because they did an assessment on each building. So we'll make sure we include that as part of the packet, just so you can have it as a reference. Okay.
Thank you.
You guys have a preference? We usually don't do colors, but
yeah,
it's going to wear out, and you're
yeah.
going to replace it. You know, over the course, you know, it'll probably be replaced a few times.
Right.
Maybe every 3 to 4 years.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know which was easier, to replace the awning or to replace the door, because when we moved in 6 years ago, we had a brand new door. We replaced it, I think in 14, and then again this year it was just about to be replaced. So
a lot of those umbrella materials, they're made to take a beating from the sun. Yeah. And so you should get more time out of your awning than getting out of your doors.
The lighter shades that you were pointing at might hold up a little better in the sun.
And like Sean was saying, is it is blocked. We have, when you head onto the 8th Street and you're heading east, you do have trees that kind of hide that. And then as you're coming on 78th Street heading west, you don't see it at all. So it's just primarily as you're heading east.
Thank you.
And now, do you need these back?
Oh, okay.
Going to talk about the public benefit.
Right, let me switch gears here.
Yeah. Exciting stuff, because historic categories get a PBRS score. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, so I am not an expert on the open space current use program, but I am part of the PBRS committee, Public Benefit Rating System Committee. A couple reasons are because community planning will have a part of the legislative process if this happens, but as well because I run the historic program and we have that as an incentive for properties that are on all of our registers. So I'll give you a quick kind of overview of both what we have currently as the program and then why we're looking at a new way to do it and what the committee is looking to the Historic Commission for feedback on. And just feel free to jump in at any time and ask questions. If I don't know the answer tonight, I'll research it and get it to you. And if anything comes up, of course, as I'm going to ask you all to kind of marinate on this for a little bit and then provide feedback. So as questions come up, just send me an email and I'll get you the answer. Okay. So we have a current use program here in the county, and it's a term commonly used to describe a set of tax deferral programs to support and protect commercially farmed land and land set aside for enjoyment and social well-being of the state and its citizens. So there are four designations under the larger current use program. There's open space, farm and agricultural land, timberland, and designated forest land. So the program that historic sites are eligible under is under the open space classification. So under open space, the eligibility falls within having to do a soil conservation enhancement of natural resources, stream protection, enhancement of recreational opportunities, and historic preservation. And historic has a acreage size limit, whereas our historic sites, they don't have that because they do we do have them in urban areas that are all going to be on smaller properties. So here in Clark County, how our eligibility is for the benefit for under the historic preservation is that you have to be on the National Register, the Clark County Heritage Register, or the Washington Heritage Register. And as you all know, the Clark County Heritage Register is regulatory, while the other two are non-regulatory. So what is a public benefit rating system? So per the state, it's a tool for evaluating the benefits to the general welfare of the community, the public benefit, as well as the value of those benefits as determined through application of a rating system. So right now, no matter what category you're eligible for under the open space, everyone gets the same benefit depending on formula. So a rating system would then allow a county and the community to prioritize what things that they find that they feel really important, that are really important to preserve, and then develop a scale, a rating system that the property owners, depending on what resources they had on their property, could get these points that would then deduct the amount for their deduction for their benefit from the open space. So That is what a PBRS is. So there were, based on some challenges the citizens brought forward in 2017 to County Council, it was suggested that a committee be formed to see if establishing a PBRS was right for Clark County. Department of Revenue. Yeah. So a PBRS allows a little bit more flexibility to address unique land situations. It provides tax options for those who no longer qualify for other programs. So for instance, the agricultural current use, you have to be make a certain amount of revenue for those programs, and say you're retiring and you still own the farm. If you aren't making that revenue, then technically you're no longer eligible to be on the program, and then you have to pay back taxes for that. So a lot of other jurisdictions that have PBRS have the ability to transition those kinds of situations into another category. They may not get the same benefit, but they wouldn't have to have those back taxes, and then they would still fit into a different type of a program that would sustain that agricultural use, but it wouldn't require the same standards of revenue of farming maybe at that moment. So that was one of the other ways. And then it powers the community to further conserve so that you can encourage such, you know, trail linkages and more parks and give incentives to property owners that have the restrictions on their property where they can't develop it, but they're protecting those resources like watersheds and creeks and riverbeds and things like that that are important for our environment. So we, of course, did our research of who's got them in the state of Washington, and there are currently 17 of the 39 counties in the state that have a public benefit rating system. You can see the list there. So the committee is composed of the folks from the assessor's office, public works, community planning, community development, legal representative, the Columbia Land Trust, folks from agricultural and forestry industry here in the county. We have a representative from the city of Ridgefield, and then WSU Extension as well, as they work with a lot of farmers and have a lot of information on that. Yeah.
Is a locally, you know, the criteria and all that, it's all locally developed.
Yep. Correct. So once we saw what counties were utilizing this system, we kind of looked at those that are more similar to Clark County, either by proximity or the demographics, population size, urban, rural kind of look. And so Cowlitz, King, and Pierce, Spokane is the ones we kind of started looking at more closely. And we decided to concentrate on King County's because they had a very robust program that was had a lot of great information on how they went about doing it. So we decided to kind of utilize their program as a template to see how Clark County, as we do things here now, could fit into that type of program.
How long is King County's program been in place?
I want to say maybe 15 years, but I'll double check on that. So I provided you all the kind of that research information booklet that King County has for their program. So when the committee was looking at all of these, we wanted to make sure that we were well versed in what the county already has going on and what's happening in those kind of different categories to make sure that we had the right people telling us what was going on. So we had presentations from the staff that does wildlife and habitat work here in the county, our parks and recreation, historic preservation. I gave them a presentation about the our program, and then soon we'll be hearing from Ag and Forestry. So they're trying to get up to speed on what's currently programmed here in Clark County and how it would fit into a public benefit rating system. So how we fit in is King County's, they have three categories for historic. So the first one is historic landmark or archaeological site, buffer to a designated site. So this means that it's a property that's next to a designated historic site. And if you read the category specifically, obviously, King County is really about restoring native vegetation. And so not only do you have to be next to it, but you have the native population part of your property that you're restoring or you have. So it's more than just being next to a historic site. The next one, historic landmark or archaeological site, a designated site. So that's pretty cut and dry. If it's on the register, and it's the regulatory register, then it can receive point value for being on the register. The third one is historic landmark or archaeological site. It's eligible. And I know we've had a lot of conversations about what that means. So there's that to consider. So we can go more into that. But these are King County's categories. And they're more detailed, of course, in the resource information booklet.
So designated, they're using that term as like a site that's listed on one of the three registers, either the local, the state, or the
national. But they make it clear that it's for those that are regulatory registered. Let's see. I've been asking questions to them about their program. King County is a little bit different. I think they have a King County Historic Preservation Program, but each city, I think, has their own registers. So, like, Clark County would have a register, and then the City of Vancouver would have their own register, but they're all regulatory, so all of them are can be eligible. So, what the PBRS committee is looking to do, kind of the first step, is to see how we may, as a county, put together categories under all of these different topics. So they're looking to those that work in those programs to provide some feedback to the committee on what they think about what King County had done and their category descriptions, and whether or not that'd be something that would be compatible here or something that we would want to maybe do differently. So that's kind of what we're asking you all to review and kind of think about for the historic element of it. So as I mentioned before, right now, if you are any of those categories under open space currently, historic, stream protection, you all get the same benefit. And it's a complicated formula having to do with soils. So it's depending on what the resource is, everyone gets the same. So with a rating system, then of course, you, depending on what resource you had on your property, would determine the value that was the benefit that you receive. So like you'll see in King County's, you know, every category has a point value, and a property could have several categories, and depending on what they have, then it equals out to a percentage that's taken off the assessed value of the land, and that's how you receive your benefit. We don't know that's how Clark County's going to do it, but we're just kind of taking this first exercise to see how it may work using King County as a template.
So Jackie, yeah. The committee's work, so the point system that's laid out in the King County ordinance, the committee, are they thinking that they would use the same point system, or is that even that point system up in the air of how many points?
That'd be all open. I think they want to kind of see how what we have now may fit into similarities with King County, and then there's going to be definitely a big public process, because the county and the communities are going to have to determine what their priorities are, right? We may not have the same priorities here in Clark County that King County has. So, like, as you'll notice, the biggest point value, or I think it was the trail linkages. We may have that. We may decide maybe historic sites are, like, you know, have a larger point value. So it is really based on what the county wants to do on their priorities. And I'm sure that's something they would want to hear from you all, too, as what you would think about that. So this is still beginning. So right now, like I said, just take a look at those King County categories and how we do things, how you maybe could envision something for our program fitting into this, and then anything else that maybe we haven't thought of that could be a benefit for our historic property owners.
And so, Jackie, if a property is listed on the historic register, do you happen to know how much the benefit is now?
Yes, so I did look at a couple of our current historic sites that are receiving the benefit. So I got one from that's in the city of Vancouver and one that's more in the rural area near Battlegrounds to kind of see if there was any difference. So one of the one for the city of Vancouver, let's say, so the and it's only on the land value, right? So the market land assessed value for this property was $131,000. With the current use open space designation, it went down to $57. So that's quite a deduction off that.
What kind of a property was that?
Residential.
Okay.
And then the one near Battleground that's outside of the city, very similar. Their land value was $177,000, and with the valuation of the current use open space, it went down to $468,000. So, yeah. So before, like, the land and structures totaled together would be was $516,000, and with the designation for open space, it went down to $339,000 that they're taxed on.
So the system that we have right now, because I was looking at it because I wanted to understand it,
it
really looks like because historic buildings are shoehorned into this other system, the historic buildings actually have a huge benefit because their current use is determined by something that actually has nothing to do with their current use.
Mm-hmm.
It's an agricultural use, which so any of those most historic sites that just really wouldn't apply to unless it's a historic landscape. So that might not be fair, but it sure is good for historic buildings.
Yes.
So I think that would be one thing that would worry me a little bit is that we could be losing a great benefit that it sounds like hardly anyone uses anyway.
Right, unless, you know, they prioritize that enough that it still receives a benefit. It may not be to the extent that it does, but that'll be part of that public process.
So, and I noticed in this that the example does include an easement, though.
For some of them, yes.
Some of them.
Yes, so like if you were going to do like the trail linkage, I believe that that's how when that falls.
Or a historic preservation easement, which could be, you know, all the development rights on your site. Does
perhaps, if that's how it was.
Or a facade easement.
Yeah.
So you could use that.
You could.
I think that when I was looking over this, my thoughts were, well, make the point value for historic preservation as big as possible. And I think that that's also a little bit reasonable here in Clark County because of the historic resources that we have. I think that preserving them is actually more to the benefit of this community because it's one of the things that makes this community special beyond how history makes communities special in general. I think for that big question about designation versus, you know, eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me the biggest question is really just benefit should be attached to obligation to preserve. And so if the designation itself doesn't have an obligation to preserve, then the system needs to have an obligation to preserve. So say it's a National Register site. There's no obligation to preserve those. I don't think that it should have the benefit unless the system says, well, all alterations have to go through the normal county process and get a certificate of appropriateness during participation. So however it's handled, I think that there needs to be an obligation to preserve attached to the benefit one way or the other. For the eligibility, I think there's actually a pretty simple answer to that question.
Yeah.
Because everyone picks up on this eligible thing, and I saw this in codes when we were trying to rewrite the building code language for historic building. And it's all because they're picking up on the federal language. And in the federal language, it's the SHPO that makes
right.
determination.
Right.
So it's a it's an official determination of eligibility from the State Historic Preservation Office. So if we want to use eligibility, we can just point to that one.
So they would it would be the SHPO that would determine it?
Yeah, the SHPO would do the determination of
but don't you have to but you have to give them something, right? Usually they're through like the section 106
yeah, it's section 106, something else triggers it.
Right. And that some research is done, right, to give them a recommendation mm-hmm. on that.
And so I mean our body could provide that research, you know, could be the one who gathers the information, but they are still the ones who do the determination.
Mm-hmm. Or it could just be our body.
You could say that we have to make the determination. Mm-hmm. But I think that there are pretty simple solutions to that question.
Yeah, that's one of the questions I did ask King County. I was like, how, you know, how do you...
Well, they have their own
they have
preservation officer.
They do. And they also, they utilize their surveys. So, you know, if this their whatever properties that they have surveyed, part of that survey says whether or not it's eligible per some certain criteria. So I think it's similar to probably what the state SHPO does and to determine that. We just don't have that in place so much right now.
And so if eligible properties are going to get benefit, I think that same thing, that there should be an obligation to preserve that's attached to it somehow before they get the benefit.
I mean, it's kind of similar to our special evaluation program. Part of that, there's an agreement that they have to sign that, because if it's a national register, that they still have to abide by the secretary.
The only reason that I'm okay with that being, you know, not only Clark County, is because the program itself creates the obligation to preserve.
Yeah. Or you just give it to the local registers and encourage people to get on it, right?
Those are fair points. Kind of underscores the need to update the historic inventory here in Clark County, which mm-hmm. is yeah. something we've talked about yeah. many times. Anything else?
Any other questions?
I think that also the Vancouver Heritage Overlay Districts, could, I mean, they come with
mm-hmm.
requirements on sure. them, so it's just whether we believe that those requirements are enough for the benefit. And I think that this is, could be something that could be pretty big benefit to some, especially the Main Street Heritage Overlay District. Those low-rise buildings that are, you know, maybe seeing an increasing development pressure.
Yeah. Well, think about that when you guys kind of look through that, because yeah, we have some unique circumstances here that we could, you know, put into this type of rating system.
So you're just going to be looking for feedback from
yeah. us. Yes, kind of want some thoughts, some feedback.
What's the timeline?
I was hoping that you all might be able to get me something by next Wednesday, just your thought in an email individually. We have a committee meeting on the 20th that I'd like to report back to them just to kind of give them some essence of what you all are thinking now. I had this on the agenda for August, but wasn't going to make you all do that at 10 o'clock. So I know it's kind of short notice, but... and I told them that, you know, it may be a process, but if we could just get some initial feedback, that'd be great.
Okay. And the timeline for implementation?
For the whole thing? Oh, it's we're just step by step. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A year or so.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, you know, looking over these just quickly, I haven't gone into this very much detail, but, you know, most of this is 3 points, 5 points, and then you get to the conservation easement or historic preservation easement, all of a sudden it bounces up to 15 points.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because of the in perpetuity?
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're
what we don't
something.
Really have here is the easement, and that mm-hmm. that could be a powerful thing on a lot of these.
Yeah, I mean, I always think of easements as sort of a linear thing through a property, but is this being used in a different way in this context?
It's basically, you know, an easement is giving someone else a certain right to your property.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the right that you're giving away is the right to change it,
mm-hmm.
or the right to tear something down or to build something on the property.
Okay.
So, I mean, we've seen this. There are facade easement programs around the country, and that's probably the biggest one. you see, where they basically make, it's an agreement that they can't make certain types of changes to their facade in perpetuity. They basically sold away the right to it. So any owner who buys that property in the future doesn't buy that right to the property.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It looks like King County has that as their one of their bonus. Mm-hmm. So they have a list of bonus criteria that you can add to your point value to. Okay, that's all I have. Okay, thank you.
Okay, old business. Let's talk about the historic grant applications due September 14th.
Yep, so it's that time of year again, and what we were asking today is if we could get some volunteers for our subcommittee that does the application reviews. So we're hoping to get it going early October, because it usually takes a bit of a process to get it through the subcommittee, and then it goes to the Historic Commission and then to the County Council.
How many do we have so far?
Nothing yet.
Next week.
Uh-huh. But I know that there. I've had a lot of conversation with organizations that are applying. So yeah, I don't know how many for sure, but yeah, it'd be great to have three members be on it.
Mark, did you, Mark?
I know Sarah's done it in the past, and she really enjoyed it. Yeah. I did it with Alex last year, and I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it this year, though,
okay.
Because since I'm on the board of the museum, I don't think
you have to recuse yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think we want anyone else.
Okay. That makes
well, and it's you know not just that it would be unfair to the other ones. I think it'd probably be unfair to them because I'd have to not weigh in on their application. So I would encourage any of you others to do it. It was a great experience for me.
It's been a couple of years since I've done it, so I probably do.
Okay.
I'll do it.
Okay, great. Thanks, Michelle. Robert, how you feeling? Or Alex? Or Robert? You're in. Okay.
I did go last year, so I don't want to take Robert's.
I've never done it, so.
Oh, well.
So every commissioner should do it at least once.
At least once. So, yeah. So we'll form a subcommittee for the 2019 Historic Promotion Grants. And the subcommittee will consist of Mr. Manley, Ms. Kapitanovich, and myself, Mr. Hines.
Okay, we'll get in touch with you all probably this week and see if we can get a date that works for everybody for that first meeting. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Sean, you're going to tell us about the NAPC conference.
I am.
I don't have anything. I was just shutting it down.
Sorry. So the National Alliance of Preservation Commissions National Conference in Des Moines, Iowa. And it was a great experience overall. I think it was good to see how other commissions approach issues and how preservation is done in other places. Preservation is unrelentingly local, so it was good to see that. And I thought that our presentation actually went quite well. We were part of a panel with Baltimore and with the gentleman from the National Trust for Historic Preservation, whose name I have forgotten, unfortunately, but he has played a large role in these issues of equity and preservation and an underrepresented history. So we were presenting on the Jefferson Davis Memorial. And it was very interesting because we were the ones who actually, they built the session because of our proposal. They weren't actually going to address this at the conference, so they brought in the other people. And the big takeaway from this whole section was that I am very proud of our commission for how we handled this. It was very transparent, it was very open, it was very respectful. What we saw from a lot of other places is a very different story, where they dealt with these difficult situations through unilateral police acts or things happened behind closed doors, and that just made the situation worse. So I think that the following our processes and doing it in a transparent way, I think, really reflected well on us. It was a little bit odd being one of the people presenting. As I told the people in the room, you know, we had a little marker. Meanwhile, other people have, you know, equestrian bronze statues in front of their courthouse, and they weren't presenting. So that part was a little bit odd, but we were also one of the only ones who actually went through a process to decide what to do with our marker and how to handle that moving into the future.
Was it well received?
It was very well received. I have a heavily modified version of the presentation, since the point of this was different than the last one,
right,
which I keep meaning to share back.
Your experience kind of with the overall topic as it applies nationwide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, but I understand we're presenting again, so there might be some pieces in that are worth integrating into the main presentation, or there might not be.
Yeah, she only gave us 45 minutes. I was hoping to get
Have you talked to Kim at all about?
Not recently. I have a couple of times, so it looks like we're just doing the same, the same presentation. But I'd like to see yours,
mm-hmm.
And maybe add something. Yeah, it's interesting because Alex and I got a lot of very positive feedback when we presented up at Revitalize Washington, and the fairness. So there's actually a method to the madness behind that. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, there's a big body of research that ended up in business school curricula around what you call process fairness.
Mm-hmm.
And this came out of a lot of research that corporations did, which, you know, when we started offshoring of jobs and downsizing, when people getting laid off, certain companies had a much higher rate of being sued than other companies. And so those companies sought to understand it, and academians sought to understand this. And what the research showed is that the likelihood of being sued really depended on this whole concept of process fairness, which is about impartiality, transparency, getting people to believe. And so that became part of kind of the presentation that I shared with you and that we did. And I think that was a big part of why we were successful in kind of managing it. We did a good job of clamping down all of the Nazi, she's a communist type of,
mm-hmm.
you know, banter that was going on. So it's really good. And it's a good segue into the next old business that I have jotted down here. The CLG meeting, September 25th.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So just make sure everybody's got it on their calendar. We're all going. Michelle, you couldn't make it, or you're just not aware of it?
What day is it?
The September 20th. It's during the it's during the week.
No,
yeah, she's.
Especially
yeah.
with what's going
yeah.
on right now.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
I need to teach.
Yeah.
Stay and teach.
Yes.
Is Greg?
I think, yeah, Andy's coming.
Everybody but Michelle.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. Okay.
We're gonna try to carpool.
Yeah, we can carpool. We can take
the
a couple.
Again.
We could, or we could take a couple newer cars, whichever y'all prefer. So yeah, we could rent a van or use one of the county vans, or we can take two cars that are
okay.
Just regular cars.
Or I may go up and just
yep.
spend the night at my own expense.
Okay. We'll send an email out to see who's in for carpooling and. Organized from there. And speaking of, would it be possible? Do you guys did PowerPoint presentations for these?
Mm-hmm.
Could you share it with us so that we have it part of our stuff for that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think ours is up on the DAP site.
Is it on the DAP site? Okay.
You can send it. There's an interesting conversation going on in the Harney Neighborhood Association right now, Harney Heights, because they've discovered who their neighborhood association was actually named after, who was apparently a fairly unpleasant person from the Civil War.
And so now they're mounting this effort to get all of the Harney Street and Harney Elementary and everything have the name changed. And we're just like, okay, you can change the neighborhood name, but you know, we're hoping it stops with that. We'll see.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Was he also an officer here at the fort?
Yeah, prior? General William Harney.
And why was he such
a... I mean, he was I believe he was somebody that was, I'll have to remember, the slaughtering Indians sort of indiscriminately. Mm. So, anyway, it's just like, really, it's a battle.
Something that Union and Confederate officers did?
Yeah, had in common.
Another old business which we discussed at the end of the last meeting was just around the heritage overlay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether or not there is ambiguity in the code or not ambiguity in the code, and we were going to put that on the agenda at some point.
Yes. Yeah, so just so you all know that two weeks ago, the code for the county's historic preservation was approved and adopted, so that is now live, so that's what we will use from now on. I've made contact with all the city planning directors to let them know that we've done this and that we are here to help them update their codes to make sure that they connect and work with the counties, as well as we have to update some intergovernmental agreements that point to the old code, like prior to the one we had prior. So we're going to be doing some cleanup, we've chatted with Vancouver staff about taking a look at both their city code, their historic preservation order code, and the overlays. So that'll be coming.
The cities don't have to have.
No.
They could.
They could point to the counties.
Mm-hmm. To the county.
Yeah.
I mean, we have our own. It desperately needs to be updated.
Yeah.
And since they did all the work.
Yeah. And the cities, depending on what they want, like Camas and Vancouver have historic district language in theirs, whereas the county we don't, because we're probably never going to have a district in county jurisdiction. So I've put that out there for the city planners, directors to, you know, that's the trade-off for just pointing to the county code. If you are interested in doing a historic district, then you might want to consider having your own code. So that's that.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I feel like we got kind of turned sideways a little bit in that last meeting. And, as I was reflecting on that, I think it goes back to, if you recall, the Jefferson Davis marker controversy and some of the comments that we got from Kathy Cook, right, in terms of the purpose policy versus the criteria. And I think in the course of that conversation, we were kind of confusing some of what it says in the purpose policy point about preserving the view with what the specific criteria were, and a lot of the debate there. So I think, you know, that's why, from some people's point of view, it was ambiguous. From some people's point of view, it was not ambiguous, but it really depends on, you know, how you prioritize criteria as opposed to policy. I think these are things that we need to just discuss and make more clear as we
go. Well, I mean,
forward.
just the upcoming demolition of the El Presidente is going to require a revision to the historic overlay, because it was pointed out that in the future somebody can build a 200-foot tower in that footprint.
Well, and
as long as it's set back 15 feet.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Well, and I think that it actually gets back to the way that code is written, is that it's actually written to be enforced by a deliberative body like this and not by a staff member like it is, which is why they ran into that problem, because, you know, I thought that the requirements were quite clear and the purposes were clear as well, but the purposes need a deliberative body to interpret and to enforce, while that's, you know, probably not the right role for a staff member. So having clarity about that. So, you know, how there was kind of larger issues about the views, but then there were also very specific issues about the views that the city can enforce. But still, it's that way of approaching a preservation ordinance is meant for a commission, not meant for a staff.
I would characterize it as the policy portion was basically misaligned with the criteria. And there wasn't enough criteria to be supported by the, or to support the policy.
I agree with that. I felt that way too. Mm-hmm. And I think Rob Fried expressed that regret in that sense in his testimony.
So something that we get to talk about next time, I guess.
Yeah. And then also we're still working on the rules and procedures, so that's going to be another big one that you'll be reviewing and working on to update.
Yeah. All right, so HPC chair elections. This is put on here at a time when Sarah thought she was going to be able to make it, so we have a decision to make whether or not we put this off again or we proceed without Sarah present. And the reason why I was kind of hopeful that Sarah could be present is because it now looks like, I would say, you know, she's got even odds of being one of our next city council representatives, at which point she would be obligated to serve on, what, 4 or 5 different
boards? Yeah, and it would not really be appropriate for her to be on the Historic Preservation Commission anymore because the appeal body is the city council.
Right.
She'd have to give up the seat on the Preservation Commission.
In a few months.
Yeah.
So that was something that I was hoping that, you know, we could get her to make comment about or just discuss as a commission here because a lot of things have changed in the last few months. So I open it up to the commissioners. What are your thoughts? Do you want to move forward or do you think we should delay or... The other option would be we just set up a special meeting and do it in the next week or whenever the best time is. Because we only need 48 hours to do a special meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rules and procedures. So if we just find an afternoon when it works, we just do it, right?
And we have 2 members missing.
Yeah. Is there a downside to postponing again and kind of bylaws issue?
We've already passed that. It was July. So, I mean, it's, you know, it was what it was because we had didn't have enough members. We didn't have that many members, and August was August. So.
So what do you, what's everybody's thoughts?
I would be curious to know Sarah's thoughts on this. I mean, does she still want to?
She still does. I talked to her about it, yes. And she's still, I mean, because you don't, no one knows what's going to happen, and she's passionate about this.
Is there something in our regulations that say that she would have to resign if she won the election?
I don't.
It would be a conflict of interest because she can't sit on the, because again, if somebody wants to appeal one of your decisions and it's inside the city limits, the appeal is to the historic, is to the city council. So I'm sure the city attorney, when you win, he sits you down and goes through all your community things and says, no, you have to stop doing this, or yes, this one's fine.
So this actually came up recently on the NAPC listserv about having members on the city council when it's an appeal body. And so in other jurisdictions, it is allowed. They end up recusing themselves on the appeal.
And that may be what the city attorney advises, but, mm-hmm. you know.
But... We don't know.
Well, we don't know, and I don't know. I'm sure she hasn't asked him.
And I know she had a question about it, and she still wanted to go forward with this.
I mean, technically, if Alicia wins treasurer, she can still serve on the city council, although she said she's going to. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Although she said she is going to resign because.
I think that's a reason to delay. I would like to hear from the city attorney whether what impact that would actually have on her, because if she's going to stay.
So you know. if we delay because it has been a while, we need to find a time when we can all get together and have a very short special meeting.
You don't want to just wait, do it in October? can be hard to.
You could, but I thought you didn't want to kick the can that far down the road.
It's probably, yeah. Yeah, you got to make sure you got everybody. I mean, everyone's already got October on their calendar. Yep.
Let's just find a time where we can all, I don't care, meet at Starbucks.
Yeah, it has to be a public. So you have to have.
Public, you're going to meet.
Yeah.
But you only have to give 48 hours notice, right?
Yeah, we have to go, we have to do the proper noticing for a special meeting, yes.
Okay. And so then we could just do it at a room at the library or anything.
It's got to be accessible by the public and not be allowed enough room for anyone who wanted to come to be there.
Okay. Which I think is doable. Does anybody have any conflicts, like in the next week or two, being able to do that? And we would need one staff member present. Is that how it works?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sounds like staff isn't very excited about
it. As long as we can get it. I mean, you want everybody, including Sarah, right, to participate. So that would be my only, just well, making that sure that we can get everybody.
Do you know when Andy is back?
He's in Russia, so I don't know how long that trip is.
I'd be interested in having the full commission present for that vote. I'm okay with postponing to the next meeting, probably more in favor of that than a special meeting. If it was a special meeting, I'd want to be out at least a week and a half, you know, for my schedule anyway.
Oh, it's that difficult for you to
if we yeah I'm
get together.
It was a struggle to be here tonight. I'm in the midst of moving and finishing a house and trying to get occupancy,
right.
And every second is precious right now.
Scheduling for me can involve childcare, so.
Are we all going to, those of us who are here can make it in October for the 3rd?
Yeah.
Meeting on the 3rd?
Yep.
I guess I would be inclined to kick it off and kick it down the road another month. Just, I do feel like having everyone here is kind of important.
Because I was talking to Jackie ahead of the meeting, and the way it works on other commissions is the commissioners who are vying for one of the elected positions vote for themselves. So Sarah's would not be in a position to do that, right?
I mean, let's see.
I don't know. She could convince me to vote for her.
Usually it's pretty, you know, someone nominates somebody and you go around, you got enough votes. I think it's up to the person whether or not they want to vote for themselves or not. They, of course, can.
Sounds like we're leaning toward October.
Sure. Which one?
I'm seeing staff nodding.
It's just hard to
get everybody on it and get a room and get it. We can do it, but
yep.
Prefer to do it.
For a special meeting?
Yeah. We just had two special meetings in July and August.
You know, I have never called a special meeting. I've never done that.
Well, I mean, if you want to try to find a time, I mean, I just don't see the rush. I think doing it in October.
Term's expiring.
July.
Next July?
No.
Oh, expired.
Yeah. Well, and Robert's been fine doing it. Yeah, so, I mean.
Thank you, Robert.
I mean, we pushed it off to September, which is where we're at, because I ended up in the hospital or something like that.
We'll take Carol's lead. Whatever, if you would like a special meeting, we can try to get that one. We'd have to rock, and then I don't know when Andy's back, so it could be closer to mid to late September. But we can find out, or we can just put it for October.
I don't think there's any real functional difference between a special meeting and doing it at October, is there?
Other than Robert wouldn't be chairing the October meeting.
Yeah, whoever did it.
We can do it at the beginning of the meeting.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. we do it first thing.
Yeah.
And Sarah is vice chair, so she could chair it in his absence. So yeah, I think if we just do it at the beginning of the meeting, and
no matter how crowded the agenda gets.
No matter how crowded the agenda.
Is it crowded now?
It's okay so far. We're gonna have I might have a nomination.
Well, and honestly, I think we have discussed delaying it longer than we'll discuss the voting.
Right.
All right, let's put it off. Unless we can find some time that everybody has in common, that in the interim, maybe we'll do a special meeting.
Okay, so you want me to poll people by email?
Actually, I'd really like to wait till October. You know, the staff, you know, it's a commitment to them to come to these meetings, and I would just like to wait till October if it's possible, the regular meeting.
I do not have much time left to exercise my tyranny.
Well, you're getting more time now.
You're outvoted. Robert, I think you're outvoted.
All right. October then.
Okay, we'll put it at the beginning, right, first thing. We're getting it done first.
Okay.
And whoever's here.
Maybe we make it 5:45.
I can still exercise my tyranny.
Wait, well, actually, how about that? How about we have a special meeting next month at 5:45? Robert can share it. We can select our new chair. And then we can have a regular meeting at 6.
There you go.
Really bad idea.
Excellent.
All right.
Okay.
Actually, I think that's a great idea.
We did pretty good on time tonight. Look at
that. We did.
Public comment.
I know. So now that we've got that resolved, do we have any public comment here this evening? Holly.
Holly.
Thank you, Holly. One more thing on the elections. If Sarah ends up having some kind of endorsement thing that she has to go to or something like that, then we will do some kind of a special meeting.
Okay, so we'll confirm with her that she's available October. Yeah.
All right.
Also, October is Washington Archaeology Month. Activities and stuff scheduled throughout the month, and you can check the DAP website and stuff for happenings local.
Great.
Isn't the presentation at the Historic Museum first Friday, the Day Hilborn presentation, is that October 4th?
Yes. Oh, that's my other little point here that we didn't talk about. Did we talk about the Hilborn exhibit? No.
No.
Okay, so the news was, and I've shared this with certain people, that Michael Hauser is not going to be able to do the presentation. Mm-hmm. He originally volunteered for it, but he offered to share his presentation with us, and then we would present it. And so, Sean, you had expressed some interest in doing that. I was going to talk to you, Rock, and see who might be interested in presenting, so I was going to do an introduction, maybe a little bit of biographical background, then I was going to turn it over to Michael. Michael would kind of do his CAM presentation that he has, and then we would do something, and then we would kind of focus on a couple of the buildings, like the Higgins Theater or something. So with that in mind, I would do the introduction, and then anybody want to, maybe Sean, you could take over Michael's presentation, and then Rock, maybe you could discuss some of the buildings or some of the architectural insights. And then Andy was also interested as well, because he's a big fan. So my question there was going to be, because we don't have a lot of time and because Michael's not being able to do it really kind of changes what we need to do, would it be prudent to have a subcommittee for this, Jackie?
Effectively,
it would be more of a project team.
Sure.
But it would kind of eliminate any concerns about having
quorum.
Quorum getting together.
Sure. Yeah, do you want me to help coordinate a date for you all to meet? Is that what you're thinking of?
I think we would just, first of all, we would need some open kind of email communication, which we could keep you copied in on.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And then we would probably need to get together at some point just to plan a little bit. So, Rock, I see you checking your schedule over there.
I'm just making a note in the schedule. It's the 4th.
Yep.
Okay. So let's go ahead and establish a sub.
5th, isn't it? First Friday?
First Thursday.
First Thursday.
Yep. Okay, so let's go ahead and establish a subcommittee. It'll be myself, Sean, Andy, and Rock. Kind of put together the
core. The core, but we can make sure we notice that we're meeting.
Well, Andy may not, given that he's in Russia, you don't know.
Well, he'll be back. I talked to him last.
Well, he'll be back in time for the presentation, but, you know, you probably need to get together a week ahead of time at least.
I think if there's 4 of us, we can kind of break it down. So some people can take a smaller role, some will take a larger role. And so, yeah, I was sort of disappointed that Michael couldn't do it because, I mean, we've all seen Michael present, and he's really, really good, really entertaining. But Sean says he's really entertaining.
I said no such thing. In fact, I said I was willing to do it.
We went down a storm in Iowa. So.
What time is that first Thursday talk?
6.
6 or 7?
7 p.m. featured program.
I have 6. Weird.
Okay, so we'll get some communication going back and forth. We'll start sharing some meeting materials.
Especially about exactly what time it's at.
All we need to do there is just make sure that we keep staff copied in so it's part of the public record and that we're not colluding on anything.
Okay.
7 p.m.
7.
All right, great. So we already took public comment. I guess we're done. And unless there's something else we need to talk about, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
I second that.
All in favor of adjourning tonight?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Stairs of the Historic Museum are under construction.